Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. How close is too close for a vote count? How do leaders help voters come together and move on after an election? STPB's Kevin Wooster considers a little history as we navigate the present. You can find his work on our website at sdpb.org/Wooster, and you can find him here on Thursdays talking with us. Hey, Kevin, welcome back.
It's great to be back. And first of all, you know, I am recognized as sort of a genius prognosticator when it comes to elections, because I picked Thune over Johnson in 2002 and Daschle over Thune in 2004. So you can imagine how much John Thune and Tim Johnson and Tom Daschle think of my abilities to predict an election.
But you're really good at looking back on an election and finding and finding the insight that's relevant for us today. So let's talk about, because this is something that I had not considered, and we're going to go back to, is it 2000?
Yeah, 2002.
Yeah, let's start there. All right, 524 votes.
Can you imagine?
Set the stage for us.
You know, John Thune had been a very successful three-term House member. If I remember right, he said three was all he wanted in the House, you know, and John had been around as a lobbyist and as a various, organizational heads and things, and done a nice job and built a base and wanted to take on Johnson. And Johnson seemed vulnerable. Tim Johnson, who was certainly not of the star quality, you know, in the way we looked at him, he was often underrated, I think, as a member and certainly as a campaigner, because he's a tough campaigner and smart and had good people. But I looked at it and thought, yeah, John Thune has the momentum. You know, he's got the Republican base in South Dakota, which wasn't like it is now, but it was still strong. And probably that's going to be a tough race for Tim Johnson to hold that seat. It's just, you know, 6 years after he beat Larry Pressler, the Republican three-term Senate incumbent, which was a big win for Tim Johnson. And that's kind of how we went into that. And it ended up with, I have to go back and look at what I wrote, but I think it was 350,000 roughly votes cast and a 524 vote win for Tim Johnson.
Yeah, 334,000 is what you wrote.
334, yeah.
And those votes come in a certain way from a certain area, and you're covering this for the Argus Leader at the time on Election Day. Tell me a little bit about how it unfolded.
But it was a great assignment for me, because I started out in the dark, basically out in Fort Thompson. As soon as they started taking votes to open the polls, I was in Fort Thompson and Lower Brule, and then I went and spent most of my time on Rosebud and especially up Pine Ridge, you know, where the big vote centers were for Native votes, and of course some non-Native people live on the reservations too. And it was a late night. It was Shannon County then, not Oglala Lakota County, and their votes are handled by the Fall River County auditor, Sue Ganji, at that time, and a very able auditor, is accustomed to handling those counties and understands them. And we had to wait late. And as I wrote in the column, a lot of Republicans went to bed thinking, with the trend coming West River, they always have when you cross West River, if you're a Republican, the Democrat has to be up by a certain margin because you're going to gain out here, except for the reservations. And so a lot of Republicans went in thinking John Thune had that race won, and were unhappy the next day when a pretty heavy turnout of Native votes, it was heavily Johnson, helped swing the election his way by just 524 votes.
I said 2000 earlier. I meant to say 2002. So I want to make sure to clarify that. But here is the really interesting, I think, compelling thing about this, is that there is an immediate effort to, you know, bring in the lawyers. There are thought, you know, donors, what can Thune do to push ahead? And he decides to concede at this point. Tell me a little bit about what happened in that race and what John Thune's thought process was at that time.
Yeah, well, there are still Republicans that I respect and Republicans that I don't respect that believes that there was something wrong with that vote count down the reservation. And I just talked to one the other day, and it was basically certified by a Republican county auditor, a Republican secretary of state, and a Republican attorney general. I mean, it was kind of like this situation now. Where's the beef? There really wasn't any, except supposition and, you know, So that's what John Thune was looking at, and a tremendous amount of pressure, because it wasn't a national race to the level that he would have in 2 years with the Senate Majority Leader, Minority Leader Tom Daschle, but it was pretty high profile. So he had all these people pressuring him to have a recount. And really, he would have been, you know, certainly not out of line asking for a recount with that many votes. And he decided not to. And I was surprised and amazed, and of course, later on, just really impressed as I considered that he just said, no, we're not going to do that. And a lot of people questioned it. A lot of people still question it. Of course, it's pretty hard to question it too much because he had a bigger win in 2 years. He didn't, he didn't further disenfranchise an already disenfranchised voting bloc of Native people, and he didn't further divide the state racially, which there was concern on his part, according to his staffers, that it would do. And a lot of people don't know that John Thune has deeper connections in Indian country than maybe he's given credit for, from his basketball years and the people he knows there. And so he made that decision, which I called in the column a shining act of statesmanship.
And this, I mean, when we look at where U.S. Senator John Thune, with the reelection as the whip in the Senate now, he has risen to a point in American politics that you could certainly argue, through his patience and through his efforts, it paid off for him politically in some ways. Do you think there would have been a cost to him politically for going the other route? That's speculation, you know, in a big way, of course, but
it is speculation. And he's in a Republican state that was getting more and more Republican and continued to get more and more Republican. So maybe not, but would that have affected him? I honestly, people may call me naive in this, and sometimes I am, but I honestly think John Thune was primarily driven by not being comfortable by questioning that vote and putting it all on Native people. And I think there was a pragmatic thing at play there, but I think there was also a decency thing at play there. And what do I want to do to this state? And what do I want to do to these people? How do I want to treat this state? How do I want to treat these people? And it's in his character, his nature, and I realize I've questioned some of the things he's done through the Trump years, not favorably, but I think it's in his nature to ask those questions and to respond in a way that you might expect a lineman or a Jones County guy and the son of a Navy or a Navy aviator in the war to respond, and that's with a great degree of integrity, I thought.
I wonder how much the advent of Twitter and sort of the demand for instantaneous comment from people before you have a chance to even sleep on something or gather your advisors, somebody is tweeting about stuff. I wonder how much that is playing into, you know, our current situation. The pressure to tweet, the pressure to issue a statement seems to be elevated. Do you agree with that, do you think?
Question.
Or was there a pressure that, was everybody just calling him before and saying, you know, was his phone ringing off the hook? I don't know.
Well, he was getting pressure, but not like the pressure you get today. He would have been getting pressure from all across the nation. And in this situation, he would have been probably getting pressure from the President of the United States if that happened to be what he was doing. And the amount of alternate realities that would have been created on social media about what happened allegedly on the reservation would have been stunning and shameful and damaging. And would it have affected John Thune? I don't know, and forced him to a different decision. I don't know. I do know that he made this one, and it stands out historically, especially in comparison to what's going on in our nation right now.
Right. What do we look for right now in leadership from our governor, from our, you know, congressional delegates, as we, you know, the projected winner of this race is, you know, President-elect Joe Biden, but, you know, Governor Noem is tweeting that not so fast, the process needs to play out. What's at stake here when we talk about legitimacy and division?
Well, our democracy and our democratic republic and the integrity and the strength of it, I think, is partly at stake, maybe to a great deal at stake. And I just wish the governor would not use words like rigged. I wish she could at least use words like the Congressman Johnson, Senators Johnson and Thune have used, where they've said, Obviously, there's no evidence of widespread fraud, the kind that can turn an election. Johnson, you know, would tell you that elections are messy. They are. There are a lot of people involved, a lot of votes involved, a lot of processes involved. They're not going to be perfect, but in most instances, you never have the kind of large-scale votes going wrong that are going to turn an election, thousands of them. And I wish the governor could take the lead from the congressional delegation on how she responds to this.
You can find Kevin Wooster's work on our website at sdpb.org/Wooster. Kevin, it's always just so refreshing to me to talk to you, but then also to go back to some of those elections before I was in this chair and to learn a little bit of that history as well from a veteran reporter. So thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Sure. Just don't ask me to pick the election.
Okay. No projections from Kevin Wooster. We'll leave that to the AP. Thanks, right. Kevin.